occasionally necks, then yanking the spear back before the blade could be shorn off. The young officer, Jack, was the best armored of all of them, in a long mail hauberk. He held the top of the barricade, hammering down with his shield. Choss and Carthoron fought as if on board a ship, with twinned long knives each, catching swords and counter-thrusting, while the Marlazans brawled without any rules at all, stabbing feet, spitting in faces, thrusting into groins. It appeared to Dancer that these royal guards were rather at a disadvantage in the chaos of this street fight. Yet weight of numbers was slowly telling. Their barricade was beginning to teeter backwards onto them. Gaps were being hacked open by the guards' heavy bastard swords. It was frankly looking bad for the defenders when Jack jumped down from a cart to snatch up a torch from its fitting on the bridge. He yelled to everyone, "Burn it!" and threw the torch onto the oil-soaked wood. It went up with a bursting whoosh of air. Screams reached them through the roar of flames. Dancer retreated, shielding his face from the heat of the inferno. He held a length of wood now no taller than him, the rest having been hacked away some time ago, but its cut end was sharp and wet with blood. So hot was the fire that even the timbers of the bridge caught, and it soon became obvious that the white-hot conflagration would eventually consume the entire bridge. The defenders retreated to the street. In the light of the burning bridge, Dancer could see that the Napans had retreated as well. He saw them marching away for the next bridge, Urko's command. After damming the noisome, stinking swamp of a river all year, Dancer now blessed it. Not one of those heavily armored soldiers would dare wade into that quagmire. He motioned to Carthoron. "I'm going to help Darsem. You join Urko." Carthoron raised a hand. "I'll check on Surly first." He ordered everyone else to head for Urko. Dancer started up the cobbled way that traced the channel. Carthoron struck off along an alleyway. Choss, who was wounded, was helped by Jack as the rest of the crew made their way to Urko's bridge. Jogging along through the blustering, lashing winds, Dancer decided that he had to believe that Kellenved couldn't just have been blown up like that. After all the tricks he'd pulled, it must have been another of his diversions, mustn't it? He slowed to a walk. Someone had stepped out onto the empty street in front of him. A slim fellow, all in dark clothes. Pale, with short black hair, his hands loose at his sides, and a mocking, arrogant grin on his lips, the meaning of which Dancer knew all too well. He felt his shoulders fall as he looked up at the night sky. "Oh, for the love of Burn, I do not have time for this." He waved the fellow off. "Not now. I'm damned busy." The lad laughed, high and sneering. "Not now," he teased. "Pathetic. You sound like a mark begging for his life. I expected better." Dancer pointed past him. "Look, there's a man up there about to attempt the greatest feat of arms I've ever heard of, and he could use my help." The lad reached behind his back, and when he brought his hands out, each held a very long and very slim blade. "Do I look like I give a shit?" Dancer drew his own blades from his chest baldricks. "I don't give a shit about this!" "That doesn't sound like the Dancer I'm after. I guess I went and grew up." That pulled down the youth's thin lips. He struck a ready stance, blade straight forward. "Just so you know, it's Cowl who is about to kill you." Dancer eased back into a bent knee stance. "Spare me. I've heard it all before." The youth, Cowl, charged. "What's he doing just standing there?" one of her boys complained. Lee rolled her eyes. "How in the abyss should I know?"
"Let's rush him," another suggested.
She and 10 of her remaining toughs were crouched in the mouth of an alleyway, eyeing Stonemason Bridge, where a solitary swordsman stood watch.
"Sure," Lee hissed, "your knife against his sword. Well, how we gonna get past?"
"I don't know,"
she growled once more.
"Just shoot him," another urged.
Lee hefted her crossbow.
"In this wind? Forget it. Have to get much closer."
Fine. Let's do it.
Wait, another whispered. Someone's coming.
Marching feet approached up the channel road, and a column of Napans emerged from the gloom. Grit and dirt blew about in lashing wind devils as they closed on the bridge. Lee and her fellows eased further back into the alley. At the base of the bridge, the swordsman drew his blade and threw the sheath out over the river. Lee watched it flash as it arced away. Something in that gesture made her lower her crossbow and gesture for her lads and lasses to stand down. The dark fellow, a Dol Hon, so she'd been told, struck a ready stance, blocking the narrow stone bridge. The column of Napans paused briefly, as if dumbfounded. Then an officer barked an order, and swords were drawn.
"He's not really going to..."
one of her lasses began before trailing off, almost in awe. Lee found herself straightening for a better view.
"It damn well looks like it."
The Napan soldiers, heavy infantry all, came on two at a time. They carried swords and shields. The Dol Hon held his blade two-handed. They met with a crash of blade against shield and blade. The Marlazan Tuffs swore as the first ranks of the Napans seemed to melt one blurred stroke at a time. They fell, limp to the mortared stones, or tumbled over the low guarding lip to splash onto the muddy shore below. Their officer called another order, and the next ranks came on, crouched behind shields, obviously meaning to push the fellow back. The Dol Hon did give way, but only one pace, as he somehow slashed round or above or behind to bring each shield-bearer down in a dance that Lee simply could not believe.
"What in the abyss?"
one of her lads breathed, hushed. The remaining column lost patience with hiding behind their shields, and now charged as if meaning to trample the swordsmen. This massed rush did buy them another two paces of the bridge, but some eight fell to achieve that length. Still the rest pressed on, as if simple, brutal repetition would somehow win them through. Lee actually winced when two blurred strokes felled the last two of the column. Now the swordsman faced the officer across a length of stone bridge, carpeted by the armoured corpses of his command. The officer stood motionless for a time, as he scanned the wreckage of his men and women, and then his head rose to study the agent of his destruction. He reached up and unbuttoned his helm and threw it aside, drew his sword, and carefully, gingerly, stepped between the fallen to close with the Dol Hon. The swordsman awaited him, blade out before him, not even the slightest movement of his chest beneath a simple blood-spattered jerkin betraying any shortage of breath. And Lee could not breathe either. All she could think was how this could not be, and how never, ever would she have believed such a thing. The two met, perhaps a quarter of the way up the arch of the bridge. They touched blades, and immediately the officer drew his back, slashing. The swordsman slid the blow and countered, and the officer's head sailed through the air to fall with a splash into the Marlaz River channel. The swordsman cleaned his blade on the officer's surcoat, sheathed it, and resumed his patient watch.
"Hoods mercy!"
another of her lads murmured.
"I believe so," Lee said. "Let's..."
Further marching boots rang in the night, and a second column of Napan heavy infantry emerged through the wind-tossed dust and leaf litter. Lee almost groaned in empathetic pain.
"Gods, no!"
Darsem felt his shoulders fall ever so slightly as the second column of Napan soldiers came marching up the way. He did not know what he expected to come of pursuing his purpose here, but he hadn't anticipated sadness. It was all such a waste, a damned useless waste of life and potential. Downstream, just visible, pulsed the glow of a fire where one of the other bridges burned. Whether it was stone or wood did not matter. Just so long as they kept the fire going long enough to funnel all the Napans to him. And these appeared to be the last for tonight. At orders from their female officer, they formed up, facing him just back from the base of the bridge. Then the officer came forward, sword sheathed, and picked her way through her fallen fellows to study him. For a Nappan, sharing their blue coloration, she appeared rather sickly pale, even ashen now.
You did this,
she breathed in disbelief. He pointed back the way they'd come. Turn round. Leave. No more need fall. She was shaking her head, studying the bodies.
We, too, have our duty.
He regarded the woman with new understanding. I see. Your name?
Clemens.
Darsem.
We must try...
Yes, he said, when her words tailed off. I understand. She retreated to her command and spoke to them for a time. Then, drawing, she came on, leading the attack, and Darsem winced inside. She would make this as hard as she could, wouldn't she? They met, and he slashed her among the first. Her soldiers dragged her back while the front rank raised shields. Then they came on again, two by two. The narrow stone span forced them together, inhibiting them. Darsem retreated one pace to clear space for himself and met them two-handed, clashing swords aside and thrusting at legs, arms, and exposed necks. He found he had to retreat yet another step as the fallen piled over one another on the narrow bridge. More fell, and Darsem had to force back his regret for what he had to do. It was pitiful that these good men and women should have to lay themselves down. He longed then for the old days of champions. A shout pulled them back a step, shields raised, watching him warily from beneath the lips of their inlaid iron and bronze helmets. Clemence pushed her way forward, a bloodied arm hanging limp. Even more ashen now from loss of blood, she eyed him, panting with the effort of holding herself erect. Darsem remained at the ready, blood-splashed and aching, but ready. She turned to her command, ordered, "Withdraw!" They began backing away, stepping carefully over the fallen. A few stooped to pick up or drag wounded. Clement struggled to sheathe her sword.
"Tarol will have my head for this," she said.
"But your men and women will live," Darsem finished for her. She nodded, taking a deep breath.
"We will see to the fallen."
He nodded as well. "I will not interfere."
"I thank you for that."
Now he shook his head. "No, I thank you. I did not enjoy this." She eyed him for a time, her gaze weighing.
"Good."
Carthoron slammed open the door to Smiley's to find the common room empty. "Lady Sureth," he called, panicked for some reason.
"Yes,"
she called, pushing open the kitchen door. He swallowed his sudden dread. "Ah,
where is everyone?"
"Upstairs." Shrift appeared on the stairs, peering down into the room, looking very surprised.
"Crust," she said, almost stammering. What are you doing here?"
"Where's Grinner?"
She gestured upstairs. "With Hall. She's sick or something. We're worried about her."
He started up.
"I'll take a look."
Shrift allowed him to pass with a help-yourself gesture. She followed him up. He opened the door to her room and stood, frozen for a heartbeat, unable to comprehend what confronted him. Hall lay on the bed, her chest a wet mess of blood. On the floor, just at his feet, lay Grinner, face down, stabbed in the back. As he drew breath to shout, a hand closed over his mouth from behind, and searing pain lanced his back as a length of razor iron was pushed through his torso. He fell, stunned in agony. Only distantly did he register a boot on his back and the blades being yanked free. A woman's voice, Shrift, breathed close into his ear.
"Should have paid better, Crust."
Then footsteps thumped away down the stairs. Distantly from below, he heard Sureth ask,
"How is she?"
Some mumbled answer sounded, then a table crashed and feet stamped. Someone was cursing, and he realized it was him. "Low," he told himself. "She struck low." He started dragging his body towards the stairs. They each fought with two knives, their favourites, of course, preferred weight and lengths. Dancer lost count of the thin slashes he received on arms, sides and thighs as they ran, fought, twisted, jumped, swept and rolled. Conscious thought and planning were gone. All that remained was pure instinct and muscle reflex, as attacks and blocks, feints and reverses flew past one another too fast for the mind to separate or even register. His shirt hung in tatters, slashed from his arms, chest and back. The lad's own face, neck and chest were a smear of blood, and when they grappled, tiring now, their arms slipped and slid on the sweat and blood sheathing them as they each fought for advantage. Even so, the lad, Cowl's wide eyes blazed with a seemingly insane fury, just a hand's breadth from Dancer's own, utterly untouched by the normal fear of mortality. And from this, Dancer knew he was locked in potentially the most perilous duel of his life. For no one was more dangerous than those who did not care if they lived or died. So they fought on, crashing through doors, slamming into tables, slashing, neither quite able to land a stopping, definitive blow. A kick from Cowl sent him flying backwards into the road, and the lad launched himself upon him, and Dancer caught blade for blade. The lad head-butted him, and though he turned his head aside, stars still flashed in his vision, and agony flamed from his thigh. He staggered off, clutching his leg. Cowl followed, but slowly now, shifting his grips on his knives, rubbing a bloody forearm across his face, but leaving even more of a smeared lair. His hair was a slick, sweaty mess, and he panted, favouring his own right leg as he tracked Dancer's movements. Dancer limped to half fall against the stone lip of a river channel. He shook drops of sweat from his vision, or perhaps they were tears of pain. He managed to straighten, held out his weapons, ready. The lad was nodding now as he came. He pointed one blood-smeared knife.
"You were good," he panted. "But now it ends, as it always does."
He edged up closer and closer, knives weaving in a dance of diversion and deceit, reversing, twisting, low and high, never stopping. Dancer waited until just the right distance, then rushed him. They grappled, arms twisting and sliding, neither releasing his blades. Their hot, wet breath mixed as they turned round and round each other, grunting and hissing, legs kicking, searching for a hold. Dancer realized his strength was leaving him in a steady stream out of the thrust through his leg. He had no more time. He dipped his shoulder, which allowed Cowl to bring his knife up towards his chest. Immediately, the assassin abandoned his other weapon to clamp both hands to the slick grip to push. Dancer dropped his blades to wrap both hands round Cowl's, and they stood rigid, straining, their breaths rasping from taut chests.
"It's all right," Cowl whispered, bare inches from his face, his eyes so eerie and wild.
"You did your best."
And he crooned as if to a child.
"No more worries now. Hush now. It'll all be over soon."
Dancer knew it had to be now, that this was, in fact, his last chance. He allowed a fraction of the true exhaustion that hung upon him to show, and the keen tip of Cowl's blade edged closer to his chest. The assassin leaned even more of his weight on the knife, straining. Dancer threw both of them backwards over the stone lip. In that instant of surprise, he twisted the blade up towards Cowl's neck. They hit the swampy mud and reeds and immediately sank. He lost track of the man as he flailed, coughing on a lungful of fetid, slimy water. He drew two more blades, spinning, turning, searching. But no fiend came lunging from the weeds. He lay still, worked on, slowing his breath, and listened to the night. The punishing winds lashed the tall weeds and rushes. Another brilliant burst flashed across the city, and the report of the explosion rumbled and echoed over the rooftops. Slowly, so very weary, he pushed his way through the muck for the sloped stone wall of the channel. Chapter 18 Taishren sat with his knees drawn up to his chest and his arms wrapped round them. He rocked, eyes closed, thinking, "Get up, move." But he could not. He was so tired. Just resting on land was privilege enough. The barrage was a constant background now. Blasting attacks potent enough to have sprayed the consciousness of any other practitioner across the hillsides. Still they pursued. Still they sought him.
"Just go away."
But they would not, of course. They smelled blood now, so to speak. A day ago, he simply ignored all their combined efforts as a nuisance to his flight. But not now. Now it was becoming increasingly difficult to maintain his defenses. Eventually, they would crack beneath the relentless punishment. He'd been so certain he could escape them, yet somehow they had pursued him into the deepest lineaments of Duris and found him there. Somehow they'd even tracked his essence into far hinterlands of the Warren of Thyre. He had even thrown what little bits and pieces of Mokra he'd picked up as false trails and delusions, yet they had seen through these and pushed on upon his trail. Only through the sheer might of his command did he now stave them off. The priests of Derek were utterly remorseless. If he could just hold on, outlast them, then perhaps he had a chance. He blinked then, where he crouched in an alley of shingle stone buildings in some cold city, and suddenly found himself somewhere else. It was light now, a sort of dusk, and the ground was soft beneath him. He eased the clench of his arms and raised his head, cracking open his eyes. His essence, his car, had been transported somewhere new. A plain of ashen dust surrounded him. Rounded hills rose in the distance. The sky was clear, oddly so. Stars ought to be visible in this seeming evening dusk. A man stood in front of him, short, in fine dark clothes that appeared to have seen better days. He rocked back and forth on the heels of new shoes, a short walking stick planted before him. He was Dol Hon, and projected the appearance of a wizened oldster, but Taishren could see through this affectation to the features of a young, skinny lad. He frowned, sensing around himself.
"Mirnus," he offered.
The Dol Hon lad waggled his head in an almost gesture.
"Close."
"My body remains. This buys me no time."
The lad tilted his head again, as if weighing the matter.
"Eventually. In the meantime, let's have a chat."
Taishren rose, stretching. He studied the fellow more closely, and the more he examined him, the more confused he became. The skein of his warren manipulation was different from any he'd encountered before. Somehow, altered. It was as if the fellow was annealed with a multiplicity of commingled influences and sources of power. There was even a tinge of the elder about him. It was clear to Taishren that he had endured some sort of transformational experience.
"I know of all the high sorcerers of our age," he said, walking a circuit of the strange fellow. "I've made it my research. The Ascendants, the Enchantress, the Tiste, and the Jakut. But you? I do not know you."
The little fellow looked very pleased.
"Good. Now, time is short."
Taishren shook his head. He looked away, studying his surroundings.
"No. There is nothing you can offer. There is nowhere to hide. Not even here. And this is new. Not young, obviously. No. This shard, or fragment, is very old. Ancient, even. New to be accessed, I mean."
The Dol Hon lad appeared vexed.
"Yes, yes, fine. You are well versed in Warren Thaumaturgy, I'm sure."
He drew a breath, as if calming himself.
"Kellenved," he said, tipping his head.
"Taishren."
"Good. Now."
And he raised his walking stick, brushed dirt from its silver-capped tip.
"What if I told you there was a place where you could hide from your pursuers?"
"As I said, there is no warren or realm that can escape Derek."
The Dol Hon mage raised a hand for silence.
indulge me.
What choice do you have? Indeed, what choice did he have? He was quite certain he wouldn't last out the night. He sighed, still studying the plain of wind-blown ash. There was sadness here, lingering, ancient curses of inhuman power. Elders had forged this. He shook his head. What of it?
Do you vow to serve me?
Taishren turned to regard him directly.
Serve?
The hunched mage, with his false projected thinning hair, fat little paunch, and age-twisted arms, shrugged, almost wincing.
Well, work for me.
Work,
Taishren nodded thoughtfully. Clearly, there were insights to be gained here. What lay behind this one's strange powers? Then he remembered his position and snorted.
If you can save my life, then I will work for you.
Very good. We have a deal. Now, the hard part is that you're rather far from where you have to be. You're going to have to move.
Move? He echoed. I do not think I have the strength.
I will help.
He looked the scrawny fellow up and down.
Pardon my skepticism.
We shall just have to do our best, shan't we?
Taishren shrugged. He considered himself as good as dead, anyway. Cartheron became conscious at the base of the stairs. He flailed, coughing and wincing, and thought, shit, passed out. Must have been the slide down the stairs. He edged his elbows underneath him and pulled, one over the other, until his vision darkened, and he had to take a breather, or two. He next came on to the common room floor. The door, to Smiley's, was banging in the wind. Tables were overturned, and broken glass and shards of stoneware littered the floor. Of Sureth, or Shrift, there was no sign. He took another deep breath and started for the door. Somehow, though, he couldn't bring his elbows up underneath himself anymore, and so he clawed at the floorboards, pulling. He heaved until his vision darkened once more, then eased off.
No more strength. Gonna die on this damned beer-soaked floor. What a wretched come-down in the world. Always hope to sink with my command in some damn fool brave, hopeless action.
Footsteps sounded, and he blinked, focusing his vision to see two bare feet before his face. Nappen blue.
Bare?
He peered up at a bloodied Lady Sureth. The sleeve and flesh of one arm was slashed open, and another gash bled across her stomach. She lifted one of his arms and picked him up.
How? What?
He managed, sounding delirious to himself.
Shrift was smart,
Sureth said, as she half dragged him out of the door.
She was patient, wasn't she? She killed Amos. She told me so. Amos became suspicious of her, so she staged her murder to start a blood feud with Geffen, hoped to thin our numbers even more.
Out on the street, Sureth dragged him to the nearest shop and banged on the door.
But she made one mistake, yes, Cartheron? Cartheron!
He blinked heavily, nodded or lolled his head.
Yes, a mistake, he said,
or thought he did. He couldn't be sure. There was such a loud roaring in his ears.
That's right, Sureth said. She was newest to my service, wasn't she? She thought I'd be the easiest part.
At this, Cartheron laughed. The pain was excruciating, but he laughed anyway.
God, Sureth, easy.
No, lass, you are the hardest of us all. And he heard talk then. Sureth demanding to see a healer, or mediciner, or chirurgeon, and he sank into the roaring dark winds that had been pulling at him so insistently. Nadurian watched the mage battle raging just to the north over Marla's city, and was awed by the scale of it. Astounding. At least 100 versus 1, and that one not even answering the constant withering assault. He wondered what the man or woman could possibly have done. Spat on Derek's altar? For he knew the identity of the attackers. All shared the same aspect, that of the priest-majors of Derek. Watching also were Agela and the eerie Night Chill. None had raised their warrens or powers, or whatever it may be that they could call upon should they wish to. Even this far from the clash, they did not wish to risk attracting any attention. Behind him, the sea still surged against the rocks and the thin strand of the south coast. The sky was clear and full of stars, and it was quite cold. It was as if nothing untoward at all were happening, just leagues off. He hugged himself against the chill. Neither of the sorceresses appeared to notice the wintry bite to the night air. Offshore, a vessel had dropped anchor in a nearby cove, perhaps putting in against the strange blow. Agela had assured him that this battle, or duel, would merely lash its way across the island and continue onward, unmindful of its course. Yet none of this had happened. The quarry of the chase appeared to have gone to ground somewhere in the city itself. He was anxious about this, but at least the feud didn't appear to be spilling over into any actual physical damage to the city. If all went well, it would end soon enough, and the inhabitants of Malaz would open their shutters to tomorrow's dawn and marvel at the wrack left behind by the strange storm that had battered the island overnight. And that would be that. He rubbed his hands together and blew upon them. A fire would be a fine idea. He supposed it would be up to him to collect the firewood. And why did he think of fire just now? He peered round, frowning. Because he could have sworn he'd smelled smoke. But not just any smoke. A rare and strange scent. Like burned exotic herbs and woods. Like incense. Two fists yanked on Taishren's shirt front, and he peered up, blinking. It was the Dolhon mage here with him in the narrow alleyway.
"Keep moving,"
the mage of Minas said.
"This is suicide, you realize," Taishren told him.
Nevertheless, he struggled to rise to his feet once more. Distantly, he marveled at the survival imperative of mortal flesh. Once he was on his feet, the diminutive mage took part of his weight and guided him forward, saying,
"Good. Good. Just walk. Ignore everything you might see."
Taishren arched a brow, rather curious about that command despite his bleariness. A storm of shadows enmeshed them. They churned and flowed, almost like a constant coursing waterfall, on and on. Within them, Taishren glimpsed an almost infinite regression of himself and his guide, all limping along, all in different locales, following various streets, crossing various squares, and even tracing waterfront wharves. He turned an eye on his rescuer.
"Impressive."
"Shh, that's just the opening."
Their next steps yanked them into a narrow canyon of dry, dusty slopes, and he pressed a hand to his head, groaning at the searing pain grating there from the workings of this man's warren, or altered aspect. As if peering through a kaleidoscope of possibilities, he glimpsed himself cowering at the feet of a Derek priest who laughed his victory. Himself stepping through a warren portal into a cityscape he did not know. Himself fleeing onward across a broad savanna of windswept grasses. Himself on board a small skiff sailing westward. Himself dead in more ways than he would rather have seen or cared to consider. And it all seemed so very real to him. The headache of it all was almost more than he could bear. He even began to worry for his sanity. The next moment, he became almost certain of his insanity when their path among the canyons brought them right before the muzzles of two gigantic hounds who perked up as if startled, heads tilting in disbelief. He glanced back to see them now, padding along behind, ears low, eyes narrowed on the hunt.
"There's..."
"Shh!" came a tense warning from the mage. "Almost there."
All this time, the flurry and rush of Derek probing had not relented. If anything, it seemed to be intensifying.
"They're coming," he panted.
"You're too damned potent to disguise," his guide complained.
A roar like that of a lion sounded then, followed by a scream and the crunch of bones and rending of flesh. Fearful, he tried to turn to look, but the mage of Minas urged him onward. He was, at that moment, experiencing a kind of sliding simultaneity of multiple selves that threatened to split his head in its impossibility. He felt as if his consciousness was being fragmented into pieces, and was astounded that this odd little fellow could so easily endure such a storm of manipulation, let alone generate it. Among these multiple concurrent possibilities was one strengthening version where they pushed through a tiny iron gate and up a narrow path of paving stones to tumble onto a broad slate landing before an iron-bound door. The mage was yanking on his sweaty, dirt-smeared robes.
Hurry!
But he had to hold his head just to be sure that it was still whole. And he wondered,
am I really here?
Run down at last!
A voice called. And Taishren peered over to see a coterie of Derek priests and priestesses at the gate and low wall of the property. The Mage of Minas was struggling with the door.
Come on!
He shook his head.
It's no use.
The Derek adherents swung over the wall and came on across the wild, unkempt garden. The door swung open, almost brushing Taishren aside. At that moment, he became further certain of his insanity, as the ground itself became alive with writhing vines and roots, all lashing themselves about the priests and priestesses who screamed their mortal terror. They cut and pulled and blasted at the bonds, but to no benefit he could discern, as each now began sinking, flailing and writhing in utter blind panic. The few who won through, mostly on the narrow walkway, and each of them a fang of Derek, now drew daggers. Yet at that instant, a towering presence brushed past Taishren to take these in huge armored fists and throw them aside onto the steaming ground, where the vines and roots quickly enmeshed them. All this Taishren took in almost as if dreamwalking or in a daze. He turned to the house, and what he now saw there and what he understood of it froze him completely. The spindly mage was pulling at him.
Now, come!
He shook his head in mute denial.
No, he mouthed, barely able to speak. Do you know what this is?
Yes, yes. Now move! More are coming!
He gaped up at the armored colossus as it thumped past, ignoring him completely, to re-enter the house.
You would choose to be entombed forever.
The fellow waved his hands, a touch frantic.
Not a bit of it. Now come.
He shook his head. Better any fate than this mad, desperate throw. Strangely, instead of becoming angry or impatient, the little Dolhon mage just shrugged and clasped his hands behind his back.
Well, all right, he said, but too bad for them.
And he rocked back and forth on his heels. Taishren eyed him narrowly.
Who?
The mage nodded to the street, where Taishren sensed a further mass of priests and priestesses rushing in upon them.
Damn you, he hissed.
The fellow shrugged innocently.
Perhaps you ought to get rid of them.
Taishren shook his heavy head.
I can't kill them. They're just being used.
The wizened mage rolled his eyes to the sky.
Oh, dear Ascendant. Just get rid of them. Push them away. Whatever.
He fluttered a hand to the door.
Demonstrate to me that you are worthy to be shown the secrets within.
Taishren blinked blearily in his exhaustion, taking this in.
Of course, I've driven them off before, many times, but they just returned, again and again, like a stinging cloud of insects. Yet this mage claims this would be the last time. Very well, I'll drive them off all right.
As more of the pursuers appeared, he drew down far into the depths of his warren to summon every bare remaining scrap of power to thrust it outwards in one last great surge. He stored it momentarily, feeling it gnawing within at the lineaments of his flesh like a fire, then released it in a sudden surging blast of might that shot outwards like an eruption that seared across the warrens. He opened his eyes, blinking. The little mage now stood pressed up against the sturdy iron-bound door, a hand at his forehead.
Well,
the fellow managed, his voice shaky and hoarse.
That was something.
He waved to the sky.
Behold!
Taishren glanced about. The skies were clear of pursuers. Like summoning a gale within the warrens, he'd driven them away.
Just how far, though, he couldn't say for certain. They may be gathering themselves to return this very moment. Or perhaps not.
Kellenver gestured invitingly to the door.
Impressive. You may pass within.
He eyed him sharply.
Not as a prisoner.
No, not as a prisoner, I assure you.
Somehow, he didn't think much of any assurance coming from this fellow, but he did burn with curiosity. The legendary Azath. What an opportunity.
Very well.
The supposed elderly mage opened the door and waved him in. He entered a touch tentatively, still wary despite his wonder. Kellenved pushed in behind him. The door slammed shut of its own volition.
The battle appears to be relenting, Nadurian pronounced, purely for form's sake, as no doubt both the Gala and Nightchill had sensed this long before him.
They nodded, kindly refraining from telling him to shut up. The strange woman, Nightchill, whom Agala had warned him to regard as pretty much an ascendant, had been sitting atop a tall boulder, and she climbed down now in a rather ungainly manner. This awkwardness suggested to Nadurian the suspicion that perhaps she was not entirely familiar or at ease with the form she currently possessed.
Resolution has been reached, she announced. Though what form this has taken, I cannot say for certain. I suspect...
Her words were cut off abruptly as a shape swiftly rounded the boulder and something punched into her body. Nadurian gaped, horrified to see the bloody length of an enormous sword blade standing from her chest. From behind, a man peered over her shoulder, all iron-grey hair and beard, lined savage face and sneering lips. He pointed past Nightchill to Agala, shouting,
"Make no move, witch, or she dies!"
He spared a glance for Nadurian.
"Or you, legionnaire! This is between me and her!"
Horribly, the blade twisted then as he turned it within Nightchill, and the woman shuddered, still conscious, still standing. The man returned his attention to Agala.
"Or you, mistress," he warned. "I see her there, watching. Interfere, Triss, and you are next. I, the High King, so swear."
"High King no longer, Kalor,"
Agala grated, visibly shaking with rage. Kalor barked a harsh laugh.
"What matter circumstances? We speak in timeless truths now."
He set his lips close to Nightchill's ear.
"Why not employ your witchery to blast me to cinders or crack me to shards? You are inestimably powerful, so very much more powerful than I. Why not?"
The blade twisted again, and Nightchill gurgled her agony, rising up onto her toes. Blood marred her lips, bubbling. Nadurian cast a pleading look to Agala, but the sorceress shook her head.
"Why not?" Kalor raged. "I will tell you why not. Because I have been preparing for this, sister. Ages ago, ages and ages, I purchased a rare ore mined in a land far away. A kingdom's ransom it cost me. And I dusted it upon this blade just before I plunged it into you. A pinch, just one tiny pinch, but it constrains you now, doesn't it? Now you will be the first to feel the full weight of my judgment, and your damned brothers will follow. Damn you for interfering with me! Damn you forever!"
He grasped a handful of her hair then, yanking her head high and exposing her neck.
"Your kind are notorious for the difficulty of dispatching them. But I know of one sure way. A good, clean beheading always does the trick.
Nadurian lurched forward then, no matter Agela's objections, but in an instant Kalor had yanked free the blade and set it to Nightchill's neck.
Think again, Legionnaire. I will free her head from her body.
You're going to anyway, Nadurian growled.
Yes, but do you want to be the immediate cause?
He backed away, half dragging the wounded Nightchill before him.
By the sea, I think, and I shall cast your head to the fishes.
A strange thing happened then. Ropes, or lines, or tangled netting leapt up and lashed themselves about Kalor's arm and neck to pull him backwards. He flailed, snarling, but the sea rack snatched him with a great yank, and the heavy bastard sword went flying from his grip. Nightchill collapsed, and Nadurian and Agela ran to her. Nadurian cradled the poor woman's shoulders. Amazingly, she was still conscious, and she fought to turn her head, to turn it to the shore where this Kalor fiend now flailed amid a lashing mass of twisting seaweed-draped old fishing netting and ancient grey lines, perhaps old forgotten rope from centuries of fishing. The netting was dragging him, bellowing and struggling down the strand to where a small skiff waited, pulled up on the gravel. To one side stood what appeared to be an old fisherman in tattered, worn canvas jerkin and trousers, pipe in mouth. He was gesturing with his hands, making weaving motions, even as Kalor flopped up over the side of the skiff.
I will slay you too, you damned interfering old bastard!
Kalor was yelling now, hoarse.
Sister!
He called.
I will find you again! And when I do, I will destroy you! I, Kalor, do so swear!
The seamed, sun-darkened old fisherman pushed then with his hands, and the skiff surged out into the surf, rising and falling as it crested waves, diminishing into the distance. The fisherman took his pipe from his mouth.
You are not welcome here, Kalor Eidoran Testesula!
He called to the surf.
Each time you rise, so too shall you fall.
And he set the pipe back into his mouth, nodding to himself, and came up the shore to where Nightchill lay in Nadurian's arms. All this was astounding enough to him, but to top it all off, Agela then knelt to one knee before the old man, saying,
We are sorry, Fisher. We did not mean to disturb you.
The old man waved her apology aside, his pale sky-blue eyes actually amused.
It is an old feud, and a stubborn one.
He bent over Nightchill.
Ah, sister, you are gravely wounded. It will not heal, will it?
Nightchill seemed to recognize him, and she whispered,
Fisher, now, is it?
He set her finger to her bloody lips.
Hush! Lucky for you, Milady is with me. She'll sing you whole, she will.
He picked her up quite easily for such an old fellow.
I'm honored, she murmured.
Think nothing of it, he said,
and headed off. Nadurian moved to follow, but Agela held him back by gripping his arm.
She is in good hands, she said.
Who was that?
Don't you think we ought to be heading back?
Agela brushed her sleeves, as if removing dust.
Agela! Who?
She motioned aside, as if inviting him to walk with her.
You're not going to leave me to go alone, are you?
He rolled his eyes and started off.
Fine. Don't tell me.
Some things, she said, taking his arm, aren't meant to be known.
So I gather. But what about... what's his name? That Kalor?
She shook her head, her thick mane of dark hair blowing in the gusting winds.
I don't believe we'll be seeing him again.
Dawn's pink and golden light came slanting across the town, to Lim, the man still standing guard on Stonemason's Bridge. Li also stood a vigil of a sort, leaning up against the wall, watching him. Half her lads and lasses had wandered off. A few lay in the alleyway, asleep. But not Li. She'd seen something she'd never, ever expected to see in her lifetime. Perfection. Or at least the pursuit of it. None of this wretched slouching along she'd seen so much of everywhere. No, not that. Expertise. Mastery. And she recognized it as something she'd wanted and looked for all her life. She peered down at a snoring Teuton and kicked him awake. He snorted, fumbling, then blinked up at her.
What?
I'm quitting. He frowned, pulling a hand down his face.
What?
You, boys and girls, can decide who's in charge, okay? He smacked his lips, screwed up one eye.
Quitting? Really?
Yeah. He pushed himself up onto one elbow.
Well, what you gonna do?
She nodded towards the bridge. We'll see. He eyed the bridge.
Gonna throw in with them?
She lifted her shoulders. We'll see. He pushed himself up all the way, brushed dirt from his trousers.
I'm with you.
She scowled up at him.
No, you don't have to be.
He crossed his arms, resolute.
I'm with you, lass.
She pressed a hand to her forehead, shook her head.
Gods. Fine. Whatever.
She waved to the others.
Send them off.
Right.
Teuton urged the rest of the gang back to the Gerfalcon. Then they set out towards the bridge. The swordsman calmly watched their approach. The stone arch was clear now. A crew from the Napan ship had come and collected the wounded and all the bodies. All that was left was scattered broken equipment and a lot of drying blood and other fluids staining the cobbles. He stood at ease, his sword sheathed. Crusted blood splashed his tunic and trousers. His sleeves were fairly stiff with it. Stopping a short distance off, she regarded him in turn. Dark he was, with the curly, kinky hair that suggested Dol Hon blood. Tall and wiry, handsome, in a lean and hungry sort of way. His eyes appeared dark blue, and they held an eerie distance in them, almost a kind of sadness. How the girls must sigh at that melancholy gaze, she admitted. But not her. That was not what she wanted from him. She knelt to one knee and bowed her head. Gathering her resolve, she said forcefully,
I would serve, if you would have me.
After a short silence, he said, Stand. She rose. He regarded her. Then his eyes switched to the lumbering Teuton. She looked to him as well, a touch irked by his intrusion. The giant of a fellow pushed a knuckle to his brow.
Teuton, sir, he rumbled. In your service, if you please.
The swordsman nodded. Darsem. He peered past them, towards the waterfront.
The Napan vessel?
Withdrawn, Li answered. He raised a hand, as if signalling a pause.
I warn you, it is not to me you should swear allegiance. It is my...
He paused for some time, obviously searching for the correct term. Finally, he settled on...
Employer.
The knife dancer?
He inclined his head in assent.
If that troubles you, you may go. I would quite understand.
She shook her head.
No, that doesn't bother me.
The man raised a brow, obviously quite surprised.
Very well. This way.
And he turned round and headed back over the bridge. Dancer walked the streets in the early morning light, or more accurately, he tottered, paused, staggered, and dragged himself along. Early risers out on the streets to inspect the damage from the overnight storm took one look at him, gaped, and ran in the opposite direction. He found the door to Smiley's ajar, the common room a mess of overturned tables, chairs, and broken glassware. Surly sat on a tall stool at the bar. An old man bent at her bared arm, sewing up a long, ugly-looking gash. Seeing him, the Napan crew, Chos, Urko, and Takaris, all lurched to their feet, swearing, and came forward to help. He waved them off and eased himself down in a chair at a table next to the door. Chos came round with a tiny shot glass that he filled from some foreign-looking decanter.
"You look like you've been dragged behind horses."
He also draped a blanket over his shoulders.
"Feel like it, too," he answered,
and tossed back the shot, only to hiss and wince when the alcohol stung his gashed lip. Blood now caked the glass from his smeared hands, and he realized he badly needed to clean up.
"Who's after you?" he asked of Surly.
The churgeon peered over and looked him up and down.
"I'm good, but I'm not that good."
"I'll take whatever you got,"
Dancer answered. He looked to Chos. "So, what happened?" The burly mariner leaned forward onto his elbows, scowling.
"We lost Hall and Grinner.
Shrift tried to throw in for Taral and crossed his sore wounded."
"What of the locals? What was his name? Dujek?"
Urko jerked a thumb to the kitchen.
"Him and Jack are making breakfast. We sent the rest of the troops off to rest."
Dancer nodded at that.
"Sounds good. I need that. And a bath."
"Don't look at us,"
Takaris told him. The old churgeon looked round again and pointed down the street.
"Try old Lady Carrigan. Runs a boarding house. She has a bath."
Dancer tipped his head. "Many thanks." He tried to rise, then found he'd have to try harder if he wished to succeed. The door opened, and in strode a blood-splashed Darsem. Everyone in the room stared for a time, silent. He answered their stares with a pinched brow.
"So,"
Dancer finally said into the silence,
"you held them off."
The swordsman gave a curt assent.
I apologize for not being there. I was on my way, but I was sidetracked.
Darsem looked him up and down.
"So I see."
The door opened again, and in walked their old enemy, Lee, and a huge street tough. Urko lurched to his feet, bellowing,
"What's this?"
Darsem raised his hands for calm.
"They're here to join."
Urko fell back into his chair with a massive sigh.
"Thank the gods."
The young woman, his opponent from prior encounters, looked Dancer up and down. With a sort of sideways smile, she said,
"I see you met Cowl."
Dancer nodded.
"And I guess you won."
"I guess so," Dancer agreed.
"You are here to join, then?"
Lee nodded. He pointed her to Surly.
"Talk to her."
Darsem peered round the room, then asked,
"Where's the mage, Kellenved?"
Dancer felt his face stiffen, and he looked away.
"Still missing."
A soft curse sounded from Surly at the bar. She poured herself a shot from the expensive foreign decanter and tossed it back.
"Why am I not surprised?"
"We need to organize," Darsem answered. "Mok may choose to strike against us now to gain favor."
"Mok no longer,"
Lee interjected. Darsem looked at her.
"Oh?"
"One of the lasses let me know last night. He had an accident in the hold. Fell off a parapet and over the cliff. A troika of captains rules now."
"Ah. Nonetheless, they may strike."
"Let them,"
Urko growled, leaning forward.
"We can take them."
"Not if they can unite all the crews," Surly warned.
Urko sank back into his chair.
"Damn it."
Surly waved Lee to her, and the two spoke for a time. Two-Ton thumped down at a table and poured himself a flagon of beer. Then Darsim spoke to the room, addressing everyone. My strength is tactics, and I am new, so it is not for me to say. But what is our position? Everyone eyed Surly. She pointed Lee aside, murmuring something to her, then sent a hard look to Dancer.
Up to me, I guess,
he decided, and he rose, wincing and hissing as multiple cuts stretched and reopened.
We rest up, he announced. Keep a wary watch, of course. In a couple of days, we'll have a council to decide.
Everyone nodded. Dancer answered the nods.
Good. If anyone needs me, I'll be getting cleaned up.
He walked stiff-legged out of the door, making for old Lady Carrigan's. The swampy delta of a salt marsh extends out into the harbour where the main channel of the Marlaz River empties into the bay. Here, at dawn, the seabirds erupted into the air, cawing their complaints as something moved within the muck and slime. The tall reeds and cattails shook as a mud-caked shape pulled itself out of the silts and up the side of a sandbar. The man had one hand pressed to his neck where the mud glistened a deep red. His chest was shaking, as if spasming, and finally, reluctantly, a gurgling laugh burst forth from his smeared lips as he chuckled uncontrollably. Crimson bubbles foamed at the fingers pressed to his neck, yet he laughed on, wheezing. After a time, he gestured with his other hand in a sweeping motion, and darkness swirled up about him. When it dispersed, he was gone, and the spiraling seabirds descended to roost among the reeds once again.
Chapter 19. The next thing Taishren was aware of, he was outside in sunlight, leaning up against the gritty stone wall of the house, while the short, mock-elderly Kellenved had a hand on his shoulder and was peering up at him, looking quite concerned.
"You are all right?"
he asked, frowning. He blinked, thinking rather panically,
"Am I? Am I all right?"
"What?
What happened?"
"You passed out immediately," the wizened fellow said. "Exhaustion, mental and physical, obviously."
He straightened to eye the mage of Minas just as narrowly.
"Obviously," he echoed dryly.
The Dolhon mage brushed his hands together.
"Good. Well, that's that. They saw you enter the Azarth house, and so they think you entombed forever. And so they have abandoned the chase. Hmm? Just don't raise your warren any time soon. Yes?"
"Of course."
The mage took a deep breath, and his walking stick appeared in his hand.
"Well then, let us see how things have shaken out. Yes?"
And he started down the path. Ahead, two figures roused themselves to stand barring the way. One short and wiry, the other massive and holding a tall halberd across the gate. Leading the way, Kellenved paused.
"What is this?"
The short, wiry one pointed a recriminating finger.
"You are abusing your position," he accused. "How much more of this coming and going must we endure?"
The Mage of Minas tapped his walking stick to his mouth, striking an exaggerated thinking pose.
"Well, that depends entirely upon you, don't you think?"
The short, elderly fellow flinched as if struck. Clearly he was not used to being spoken to in this manner.
"Why, you little rat," he spluttered. "If you think we will tolerate these insults..."
Kellenved pushed ahead between the pair.
"You'll just have to, won't you? The house chooses, not you, so you'll just have to make the best of it."
He urged Taishren onward.
"Come, come."
Taishren slid forward, uneasily, between the scowling short fellow and the big one whose hands gripped and re-gripped the long haft of his halberd. They left them behind, staring after them, glowering pure anger.
"Who are they?" Taishren asked.
Kellenved gave a dismissive wave of a hand.
"Oh, guardians set by Byrne to watch over the house. Penance, no doubt, for some ancient crime, or..."
And he set the silver hound's head of the walking stick to his mouth.
"Devotional acts, perhaps?"
Taishren arched a brow as he regarded the diminutive mage scuttling along next to him. Clearly this one had spent a great deal of time poking about into the hidden workings of the powers active in the world. Something he had sorely neglected. The mage used his walking stick to push open the door to a bar whose hanging tile announced its name to be Smiley's. Everyone within swore and jumped to their feet as they entered. Kellenved bobbed his head.
Nice to be appreciated. How long has it been?
A lean Nappen woman at the bar answered, 3 days.
Dancer? He asked.
Recuperating.
Very good.
He motioned Taishren forward.
This way.
He paused.
Surly Taishren.
He pointed about the broad room, picking people out.
Urko, Chos, Tokaris, and, others.
Taishren nodded a greeting. Then Kellenved urged him up a stairway.
My office, he explained.
Within, he gestured to a side table.
Drink?
Taishren found a decanter of white wine and poured himself a touch. He crossed to the one window and peered out at grey slate roofs, a cloudy sky, and the iron-grey waters of the bay beyond. He sighed his discouragement.
So, I'm working for a petty criminal.
Kellenved had eased himself down in a chair behind the expanse of a broad, empty desk. His chin barely cleared it, and he frowned, studying the bulky piece as if it had unaccountably risen. He raised a finger.
Soon to be far less petty.
A knock, and the door opened to reveal a tall, lean fellow who moved stiffly, as if feeling recent wounds. Kellenved stood.
Ah, Dancer, this is Taishren.
Dancer nodded, and Taishren studied him in turn. Deadly, he decided. Another knock, and in came a broad-shouldered, curly-haired man who nodded to Dancer and Kellenved in turn. Kellenved made the introductions.
So they were chasing you, Dancer said.
Taishren inclined his head. A third knock heralded the Nappen woman, Surly. She studied everyone, then shut the door behind her.
Thank you for helping, she said.
Taishren could read the pain the admission of such a need cost her. Kellenved set his hands on the desk before him.
Good. We are all here. What I want to know is why we are. We should be in the hold by now.
Everyone blinked at him, uncertain. The rather hard-bitten-looking woman, Surly, cleared her throat.
I do not believe the captains would accept you.
Kellenved shrugged.
They will have no choice.
Good luck, Surly answered. But we're leaving. The one called Dancer crossed his arms and leaned up against the desk.
Why?
She laughed.
Why? They know we're here. They won't give up. We have to go.
She waved to Kellenved.
You can keep the Twisted. It's more yours than ours. We'll take some smaller craft tonight and head out. We're thinking of going north, serving with the Falari.
No,
Kellenved said. She blinked, drawing herself up stiffly.
You cannot stop us.
Kellenved raised his open hands.
I know. I cannot compel you, nor would I want to. What I can do is offer something.
She eyed him, openly suspicious.
What? Nap.
Her look changed to one of skeptical evaluation.
Really? You think you can offer Nap?
He nodded, quite serious. The woman's gaze narrowed and shifted to the one called Dancer.
No one kills Tarl. I forbid it.
Both Kellenved and Dancer nodded, and Taishren found it humorous that they actually nodded in unison.
Agreed, said Kellenved. And just how will you perform this miracle?
Surly asked, cocking a brow. The hunched little mage tapped his hands on the desk.
Tonight, we will take the hold.
Both her brows rose as she considered this.
Ah, I see.
Dancer wasn't ready for another fight so soon. He wasn't happy with Kellenved's announcement, but when everyone had been dismissed to organize the move, the mage assured him that it wouldn't come to that. Dancer took him at his word and went to prepare. He had discarded his old clothes, which had been hacked to rags, and selected a new shirt and trousers. He retied the bindings over the thrust through his thigh, feeling the stitches pulling, and dressed, then drew on his thin armored vest, his shirt, his baldrics, and a brocaded felt vest overall. When night came, they set out, leaving a skeleton guard at Smiley's. Since Lee's defection to Darsem, half her crew had come over as well, so they now effectively controlled the entire city. All that was left was the hold, as Kellenved rightly saw. All told, they mustered close to 50 foot soldiers. Jack and Takaris commanded a contingent of 20, and Dujek and Chos another. Both of these had set out earlier, overland, to come to the hold from the rear. The main party, Darsem, Dancer, Kellenved, and the mage Teshren, together with Surly, the Nappans, and Lee, would climb the twisting rampart way. Carthoron alone remained behind, still gravely wounded, and guarded by 4 trusted local hires. Dancer winced all the way, favoring his wounded leg. He hoped he wouldn't have to act later, and with that in mind, he pushed ahead to where Darsem led.
"I'm wounded," he whispered as they climbed the broad, twisting stairs.
"I saw."
"You'll have to cover for me."
"Agreed."
"Good."
He fell back to Kellenved's side. The mage was faring no better, puffing and sweating.
"No wonder the city and the hold are so divided," he huffed, wiping his face with a handkerchief.
"It's good for you to get out."
"Says who?"
After much twisting and turning back and forth, they reached the top landing and the hold walls. An arched tunnel led to the first bailey, past which lay an inner bailey and the keep itself. Entrance to the inner bailey was guarded by another stone archway, and here the gatekeeper sat. Torches hissed and snapped along the wall, while a lantern in a sconce next to him provided the only light in the archway. Kellenved nodded to him.
"Lubin, I believe."
The gatekeeper, a hunchback, grinned back.
"Been wondering when you'd turn up."
"And?"
"And what?"
"Is there some secret password we should know? A key we need? Or perhaps you'd like a bag of coin?"
Though hunched from his twisted back, the fellow was quite sturdy and muscular-looking, with thick arms and thighs. Dancer thought he might prove a dangerous opponent, but he waved aside Kellenved's suggestion, saying,
"Nah, go on through."
Kellenved peered about, suspicious and rather taken aback.
"Just like that?"
"Yeah, just like that."
"Why?"
"Because I want to see what you're gonna do."
Kellenved nodded now in understanding.
"Ah, I see. You are a student of the circus of the world."
The fellow gave a wink, took a silver flask from inside his shirt, and tossed back a mouthful.
"Good luck,"
he offered. Kellenved nodded his farewell and pushed open the iron-bound door. The inner bailey was unguarded. Oil lamps flickered next to the door to the main keep. Here, Darsem and Urko took the lead. Dancer took up Kellenved's left side while Surly fell in behind. Urko slammed open the door and they marched up the entranceway into the main reception hall. A huge fire burned in a large stone fireplace along the rear wall. Tables were crowded by crews who stared now, suddenly silent. At the high table sat 3 captains. These 3 now eyed them, surprised and rather annoyed.
"So, it is true," Kellenved announced loudly. "Mock no longer."
The 3 captains shared dark, knowing grins.
"Fell drunk from a parapet," said one. "Threw himself over, pining for his sorceress lass," said another. "We haven't decided yet," explained the 3rd. Then he added, "So, what are you doing here, mage? You have the city, The old rules as under mock remain.
Kellenved walked forward, out onto the open floor of the wide hall. He tapped the stones with his walking stick as he went, a finger raised as if about to question a point of procedure.
Ah, the old rules about them. I have a question. Is it not Marlazan tradition that the strongest captain rules?
That is so, answered the bearded one on the right.
Rhenish, Dancer believed was his name.
But you are no captain.
Kellenved gave an exaggerated nod.
Ah, but you see, I believe I am. I have a vessel, the Twisted.
The middle one laughed his scorn. He bore long mustaches after the style of Mock. Hess, Dancer knew.
You may own that scow, but you are no seaman, no mariner.
The gathered crews all joined in the laughter. Kellenved waited for the noise to die down, rocking back and forth on his heels, hands behind his back. He nodded again.
True, true. I am no sailor. However, I do have sailors and captains who serve me. Skilled captains, such as Urko, Chos, and Cartheron Crust.
Nappens,
hissed the last captain at the table, scarred and sun-darkened, wearing a sturdy leather jack, long knives at his waist. Guran. Kellenved raised his chin.
Nappan renegades. Wanted outlaws. Thus, dare I say, honorary Marlazans.
Arguments broke out among the company as the gathered raiders and marines set to talking all at once. Guran banged a pewter tankard on the table for silence. Once the babble had settled, he regarded Kellenved.
Your point, he demanded.
Ah, my point. Yes, well, seeing as I have as many as 4 or 5 captains in my service, I suppose that makes me an admiral.
What?
Guran exploded. The crew surged to their feet in an uproar. Hess and Rhenish gaped at the mage, astounded by his claim. Dancer peered round at the chaos and struggled to suppress a smile. Whatever was going to transpire this night, he was enjoying this. The odd little fellow nominating himself as admiral. It took all 3 captains waving their arms and shouting and banging the table to restore order. Hess, at the center, now spoke.
You are standing for Admiral of Marlaz, are you?
Kellenved inclined his head.
I am.
You do realize that you must be ready to enforce this claim, that any challenge must be met in combat, combat with knife or sword, no tricks or damned magery.
Yes.
Combat, Hess added. To the death.
Kellenved waved a hand dismissively.
I do.
The 3 captains exchanged triumphant glances. Guran stood. Dancer felt a sudden sinking feeling, as if all their plans had just gone awry. How could the lad hope to fight any of these experienced raiders? Hadn't he foreseen a challenge? Kellenved raised a finger once more. Guran scowled, but nodded.
What?
I understand. I may nominate a champion, should you agree.
Guran cast his brother captains another glance of triumph.
Wrong.
He started down from the high table.
If you choose to hide behind a champion, then the challenger may select him from among your crew.
The sturdy fellow rounded the table and set his fist to his waist. He studied all who had come with Kellenved. The crews had remained on their feet as well, and now they set to moving the tables and benches aside, clearing a space. The captain took his time, eyeing every one of Kellenved's people. Most he dismissed immediately, such as Darsem and Urko. His gaze lingered for a time on Surly, before moving on to the last of them at the rear, the young woman, Lee. Dancer snarled inwardly. Stupid traditions. They should just set to knifing everyone. To this end, he caught Surly's eye, and was surprised to see there a similar opinion. But Kellenved obviously knew him too well, because he felt the lad's hand at his arm, pressing him back. Guran gestured to Lee, inviting her forward.
You, lass, you'll do. Will you fight for your admiral here?
No, Dasem called, stepping up. Not her. I will fight. Guran waggled a finger at him.
No, boyo, not you.
He pointed to Lee. Her. Dasem faced her. You need not do this. None will hold you to it. Surprising Dancer, the lean young woman looked to Surly as if seeking permission, and Surly nodded as if granting it. Smiling, she turned to Guran.
I accept.
A wide space had been cleared, and everyone edged back towards the walls. Guran drew his long knives while he started to circle. Dancer fumed inwardly at this development. The man was obviously a veteran of countless knife fights, on land and at sea. How could Kellenved have allowed his claim to come to this? Hadn't he anticipated such a possibility? Gods, from what he'd heard, Dasem on his own could slaughter everyone in this hall. But then, they wouldn't have Malas, would they? And they never would. It had to be won over, and that meant bowing to the Malazan's absurd way of handling command. But if they failed here, as they did at Heng, he resolved never to let the pint-sized fakir forget it. Lee circled as well, eyeing her opponent, and Dancer was not encouraged by what he saw. She wore plain loose pantaloons gathered in at a wide sash and a loose silk shirt. Guran, on the other hand, wore an armoured and layered leather jack over his shirt. Offhand, he didn't think much of her chances. Still, she'd shown an inner steel in their dealings, as when she'd stood up to him, and she'd been hard enough to take over after Geffen died at Surly's hands. Guran struck a ready position, both long knives raised. Lee reached back to her collar with both hands and came away with twinned, extremely long and thin stilettos. Dancer's brows rose at that. She hadn't drawn those on him. And rightly so, he reflected, as they hadn't been embroiled in a blood feud at that time. The circles the two traced tightened with every circuit. They held their blades extended, watching, gauging. Once they were near enough, they began feinting and probing. Guran slashed with his heavier weapons and far greater strength. Lee slipped and dodged, never parrying square on or meeting any attack directly. Dancer urged her on, nodding.
Good. Yes. Keep your distance. Look out. Yes.
Guran pressed the attack, confident and dismissive. Too much so, as Dancer clearly saw and hoped Lee did as well. Yet the man had survived countless such duels and showed a healthy respect for the woman's needle-like weapons. Suddenly they were close. Lee had chosen her moment. Guran slashed and thrust, yet she wove and slipped every attack, though they now stood toe-to-toe. Then she spun aside, whipping in a reverse circle, and her blade darted out in a blur like a striking serpent to pass through the man's neck in a needle thrust. She landed on her knees even as he slashed in return, breaking one of her blades and leaving her open to a follow-up. The second thrust never came. The man was blinking, a hand at his throat, tottering sideways and stumbling. He fell back against a table, his eyes wide and confused. Dancer let out a long breath he hadn't been aware he'd been holding. Lee straightened and flicked the few drops of blood from her remaining stiletto. Guran dropped both his weapons to clutch at his neck. He was staring about, wildly, his eyes almost pleading. Then he fell to his knees and toppled forward, dead. In the silence that followed, Dancer noted how Lee inclined her head to Surly, and how Surly came out to take her hands and congratulate her. Kellenved stepped to the centre of the cleared space. He planted his walking stick and regarded the other two captains.
Do we have an accord? He asked.
Hess and Rhenish glanced to the crews, as if gauging their chances. Kellenved saw it, and he tapped his walking stick on the ground once more. The resounding echoes of that merest touch rattled the windows and forced groans from the blackened timber rafters far above. Dust came sifting down over everyone. Both captains jerked an assent, And Kellenved nodded loftily, satisfied.
Excellent. Our business is done, then.
He waved to the crews.
Return to the tables. I'll not interfere with the festivities.
He motioned to Hess.
Just what is the occasion, anyway?
Hess drew a shaky hand down his mustaches. He bowed his head.
It is one of the festivals of Kem. Admiral, sir.
Ah, yes, of course.
He extended an arm to the stairs.
Might we have a tour of the quarters?
Hess bowed again, inviting him forward.
Yes, Admiral. This way.
Kellenved motioned to Taishren.
Come, you may find this of interest.
This new mage, a renegade from Kartul, Dancer understood, looked utterly disdainful, but steeled himself with a breath and followed. Dancer went to Lee, who was pouring herself a glass of wine. He bowed his head in acknowledgement.
Well done. Very impressive. I'm glad we never had to cross blades.
She daubed a cloth to her face, nodding.
Thank you.
Her glance, he noticed, was not upon him, but over his shoulder to... He looked. The swordsman, Darsem, who had moved to put his back to a wall and was assessing the various exits and blind spots in the chamber.
Have you seen him fight? She asked.
Rather startled by the question, he frowned, shaking his head.
No.
Why? A secretive smile came to her lips, and she gave him a strange look, as if to say,
You have no idea.
He wondered then what he had missed in her exchanges with Darsem, and it seemed with Surly. He watched Kellenved climbing the stairs with the Kartul mage, Taishren, waving his hands, and no doubt spouting the most absurd nonsense. It was no longer just the two of them. Things would be much more complicated now. Epilogue. They were packing up their possessions at Smiley's for their move to the hold, when a cry of dismay and pain from Kellenved in his office brought Dancer running, him and several Nappans, and the bodyguard Kellenved now trailed round after him. But Dancer was the first to arrive. He found the mage on his hands and knees on the floor, his butt in the air, as he shuffled about, running his hands over the dusty floorboards, moaning. Dancer knelt beside him, taking his shoulder.
What is it? Are you wounded?
Chos, Takaris, and Lee crowded the doorway together with several of the Malazan bodyguards. The Dolhon pressed his hands to his wrinkled forehead.
Gone! It's gone! I've searched everywhere!
Dancer scanned the dirty boards.
What's gone? What is it? My stone!
Dancer flinched away.
Oh, for the love of Burn!
He pushed the lad over and crossed to the side table to pour himself a drink. Seeing everyone in the doorway, he waved them off. The Nappans exchanged uncertain glances, but nodded and headed back downstairs. Two of the bodyguards shut the door and waited outside. Kellenved had dusted himself off and retreated to the broad, empty expanse of his desk.
Someone has taken it,
he announced, steepling his fingers, his gaze narrowing. Dancer tossed back his drink.
It's just a rock! Forget it!
Kellenved shook his head.
Oh no, my friend. There's more to it than that. I can sense it.
He tapped his fingers together.
I just can't parse its secret yet.
A knock, and the door opened to reveal Surly, Lee behind her.
There a problem?
No,
Dancer began.
Who's been in here? Kellenved demanded.
Dancer looked to the ceiling in mute frustration. Surly shrugged.
Just about everyone at one time or another. The office was tossed, wasn't it? Lee?
She nodded.
Yes. Geffen's boys ran through everything looking for valuables.
The shriveled fellow, looking even more frail and tiny behind his huge desk, tapped his fingers to his lips.
No, they wouldn't have touched it.
touched what?
Lee asked. Kellenved waved her away.
Never mind.
To Surly, he said,
Who cleaned up in here?
Her mouth turned down as she considered. Urko did most of that.
Send him up.
Kellenved, Dancer began, but the mage raised a hand to forestall him.
Just a few questions.
Dancer sighed, leaned back against the low table, stretched out his legs, and crossed his arms. A while later, Urko came stomping up the stairs. He wore a stained leather apron, his sleeves pushed up over his thick forearms. Kellenved nodded to him.
Ah, good. Urko, have you seen a...
He looked him up and down.
What are you doing?
Rendering.
The mage blinked.
Right. Rendering.
It was clear to Dancer from the way he said it that he had no idea what rendering was. He flapped a hand.
Well, when you cleaned up here, did you find any curios, odd stones, bits and bobs, that sort of thing?
The huge fellow tucked his ham hands up under his armpits and cocked his head, thinking. He nodded, his head tilted.
Yeah, I remember. Two of Burn's gifts, a stone shell and a stone animal tooth, and one of them worked pieces of flint that turn up all over.
Like an arrowhead?
Yeah, but 'tisn't. It's a broken tip from a spear, river-smoothed, real glossy, from them old people from ages ago.
Kellenved's shoulders eased, and he nodded.
Yes, that's it. It's one of my favourites. Do you still have it?
He frowned then, almost wary.
Yeah, I got it. It's in the kitchen. It's a nice piece.
May I have it back?
Back? I found it, you know.
Found it? I found it, I'll have you know.
Dancer pushed forward, hands raised. To Urko he said, What would you like? For it, I mean. The big fellow's hands were out now. He slammed one fist into a palm, considering.
A ship, he finally said. A captaincy.
A captaincy?
Kellenved protested in disbelief.
For a rock?
Urko threw a hand in the air, half turning away.
Fine.
Okay,
Kellenved called, clutching the edge of the desk.
Okay. Yes. You can have the Twisted.
Not that ship. Another.
Kellenved raised his hands in surrender.
Very well. Another. A ship. Yours.
The fellow cheered up immensely, grinning.
Good. A command. And before Carthoron.
He chortled all the way down the stairs. Dancer examined the mage until he hunched his shoulders, demanding,
What?
Dancer pointed to the stairs.
You're giving away captaincies for shiny rocks now.
The little fellow flapped a hand.
He was going to get one anyway, wasn't he?
Dancer considered, scratched his brow, then shrugged.
Huh. I suppose so.
There you go.
Lee entered, holding out a triangular brown stone.
Urko told me to bring this up.
Dancer held out a hand, and she tossed it to him. He crossed the room and dropped it onto the empty desktop. It clattered there noisily, and Dancer stood looking down at it for rather a long time. Then he picked it up again and dropped it once more. Kellenved, who had been twiddling his thumbs, now looked up, puzzled. Dancer pushed the rock with a finger, and it spun lazily. Lee cleared her throat.
Is that all?
Both men were staring, fascinated at the rock. Dancer looked over, distracted, and waved her out. She went, shaking her head at the craziness of her employers, and Dancer returned to studying the worked stone spear tip. It occurred to him that he'd seen it fall to the ground many times. In Heng, now that he thought about it, it had always pointed west. Now, when he flicked it, it rocked and spun, yet always returned to point north. Every time. Kellenved was staring, his eyes huge. He pressed his fist to his chin, triumphant.
Yes, I knew it.
Knew what?
It points the way, Dancer.
The way? The way to what? Kellenved raised a finger into the air and whispered, his voice lowered, peering about as if someone were listening.
To the graveyard of the Army of Bone.
Dancer, flinching away, scowling. Children's bedtime stories.
No, true. An ancient army cursed to search forever, so they say.
Search for what? The little fellow flicked his fingers, irritated.
Well, for their enemy, I assume. What else does an army search for?
A tavern? Kellenved made a face.
Very funny. No, this is very important. We'll have to leave right away.
Dancer stared. Then, seeing that the lad was serious, laughed his utter disbelief.
Leave? In case you've forgotten, you promised these people you'd take Nap.
Kellenved waved all that aside.
Yes, yes, we'll manage that. But this...
Dancer eyed him. Look, I'm going to collect my kit, okay? He pointed, glaring. No taking off without me, all right? The little fellow's wrinkled chin was resting on his hands, flat on the desk, and he was staring at the rock, fascinated. All right, Dancer repeated. The mage blinked, glanced to him, flicked a hand.
Yes, yes.
Good. Dancer paused at the door to peer back. Kellenved was poking at the rock, making it spin. He shook his head and shut the door, thinking,
if he leaves without me, I'll kill him.
When Lee returned downstairs, Surly waved for her to join her in the kitchen. The Napan, named Carthoron, she noticed, followed her in. Surly sent a glance to the giant fellow, Urko, who went to guard the rear door. The other brother, Carthoron, stood watch at the inner door, pale and sweaty from a serious wound, but standing just the same. Surly eyed Lee up and down, and Lee, in turn, eyed Surly. Lean and hard was her evaluation, and she'd seen her in action too, against Geffen. This one was no fool. "There'll be fighting when we move against Nap," Surly said. "But you don't strike me as a sailor or a marine, isn't that so?" Lee crossed her arms.
"I can fight!"
The Napan woman nodded. At some time, Lee noticed, she'd been hit very hard across the nose. It was flattened slightly. And she kept her hair short, just as Lee did. "Yes," she said. "You gave us a very nice demonstration of that. Well done. But in the future, don't advertise your skills, eh?" Lee nodded, wondering where this was headed. "You are no mage, are you?"
"No."
Surly continued gauging her. "So you need work that will match your, particular skill. I believe I have such work, if you are interested." Lee uncrossed her arms and clasped her hands behind her back. She was surprised to find them sweaty. She inclined her head.
"I'm interested."
"Very good. I have people on the island of Nap who work for me. They need to know our plans. None of us Napans can go. We'd be detained on site. You, however, aren't Napan and aren't known. I want you to deliver a message for us. Will you do this?" For some reason, Lee found that she couldn't speak, yet inside, all she was thinking was,
"Yes, real work, not this wretched herding of street toughs or intimidating shopkeepers."
She nodded, fierce. Surly inclined her head in answer.
"Good. You will take a trader to the mainland. From there, you will take another vessel to Darial, the capital of Nap. There you will find an inn called the Pin and Strake.
You should see a man at the rear using a knife to eat or whittle. You will compliment him on the knife, and you will ask him if it's Wiccan. Have you got that? Lee nodded again.
Yes, Wiccan.
He will leave the inn later, and you will follow him. He will lead you to another man, a very large Napan, fat rather than muscular, not like Urko, and you will say to him, "Your worst student sends her regards." Surly studied her critically. Do you have that?
Yes. Worst student.
You understand that if you vary at all from these instructions, you will be killed. Lee felt a fierce desire to leave at once. She could do this.
I can do this. This woman, Surly, will see.
She swallowed hard to say tautly,
"Yes."
The Napan nodded again. Very good. He will ask if you have a message for him, and you will say this. We are proceeding by other means. Repeat that, please. Lee took a breath to steel herself, repeated,
"We are proceeding by other means."
The woman smiled faintly. Lee had the feeling that this was all the smile the woman would ever muster. Good. Now, do not worry. It's just a message, but your name is known, and I want you to change it. A new name for a new role. Can you think of one? She swallowed.
I've always liked the name Opal.
Surly inclined her head in assent, accepting it.
Very good. Opal.
She took hold of her shoulders, looking her up and down. Give me those earrings, she said. Too distinctive. Lee handed them over. After examining them for a moment, Surly broke one in two and handed one of the pieces to her. Take this. You may have to send a message. Include your half to prove authenticity. Yes? Lee squeezed the fragment in her hand. Surly looked to Urko, who peered out into the back alley, then nodded the all clear. Surly handed Lee a small bag of coin and gestured her out. May Kem watch over you. Lee bowed to her and went to the door, but just outside she stopped and whispered low to the great hulking fellow.
Who is she?
Someone worth following, lass. Now, go.
He pushed her on with one wide paw. She went, and not running either, as that would attract attention. She walked down to the docks, where she'd get a room for the night, before taking a day trader across to the mainland tomorrow. Under a hanging street lamp, she opened her hand to examine the fragment. It was half the hummingbird earring, just the clasp that would pinch the ear, a silver, three-toed bird's claw.
Deadhouse Landing, Path to Ascendancy, Book 2 is published by Random House Audiobooks, a division of the Penguin Random House Group. Copyright Ian Cameron Esselmont, 2017. Copyright in recording Random House Audiobooks. Ian Cameron Esselmont has asserted his right under the Copyright Designs and Patents Act 1988 to be identified as the author of this work.
This audiobook production was distributed by Brilliance Audio. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.